Hello again, everyone, and welcome. This is Julie Knudsen with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 131, and the first episode of the year 2021. So I'm going to start this one with a small discussion in the beginning about the new puppy. Not totally converged on a name yet, but getting close. By the next podcast, we'll have it. And then another discussion, a New Year's kind of a discussion. And I do this every year, kind of about looking ahead to the year and the animals in our lives and how we want that to, you know, maybe just some kind of get you going on a real optimistic, positive foot on what is going to come ahead. So to bring everybody up to date on the little one, and the reason it's hard to find a name because one, she's, just so people know, this is not my dog. I'm doing this for a long, long time client. And because she's a high potential dog, it would be fun to watch and share this with everybody as we go along. So she's about, I don't know, I'm going to say 10 weeks, 11 weeks, something like that. So one of the most important things is we do the walk every day, and we do it by ourselves, not anybody else or another dog. And we go out, and she's learned in this period of time that there's a lot of edible things out there. Oh, just goodies. Because I live kind of in the middle of nowhere. So there's deer excrement and coyote and birds. And it's also heavy goose season right now. So a lot of times when people just wing them and they're not totally okay, you know, they go and land somewhere and then the coyotes get them and then they tear them apart. And then there's always just wonderful things to eat out there. So our walks are becoming, to a degree now, sort of like a truffle hunt. And, you know, that's not my intention, but this time of year just makes it even more something that's real easy to do. So that's unsatisfying to go out. And I know what she's doing now. We're not hunting birds. We are hunting truffles. So I can't change that so much, but I have to go, if I go kind of the same place all the time, she has already learned exactly, you know, where the deer go and stand and where the coyotes like to go. And so now we just run spot to spot. So I the only way I can counter that isn't by stopping doing the walk, nor is it by getting after her. If I started correcting her, no, 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 and yelling at her, she isn't going to put that together in her head. She isn't going to understand, oh, I'm eating this coyote poop and I'm not supposed to. I'm just supposed to eat my Purina Pro Plan. And that just doesn't work like that. She just knows she's out there having a good time and I'm mad at her. And that can introduce a lot of other secondary problems. A little bit of resentment, a little bit, well, I'll just never be close enough where you can ever catch me. All kinds of things. So I'm going after it by going different places where she doesn't know just where to look. And just sometimes I shorten the walks so she doesn't get real carried away with all that stuff. And, you know, even if we do a retrieve at the beginning or in the middle or at the end, which she'll gladly do, but we're immediately truffle hunting. And if we find a truffle on the way to a retrieve right now, she might just stop in the middle of it and do the truffle hunting and eat what she can. And then if she remembers, go get the puppy bumper and come back. So that's what we're working through. The other, and it's kind of negative thing for me, is when we walk just like from the house, because I can go out almost 360 degrees and go different places. When we go out, since we're, you know, really know where we are, when we turn around and start heading back, she'll truffle hunt the way back. And then when she sees the kennel building or the house or the outdoor kennel that she's in sometimes, she'll just take off in a dead run. Hey, I know where we're going. She just takes off. And sometimes I can get her back, and sometimes I can't get her back. So I don't like that behavior. I don't like a dog. It's like a barn sour horse. You know, it's like, we're done. I'm going to go back where it's warm and I can get the water to wash all this down. I don't really care for that. So I have to, you know, sometimes if I can, I just turn around and go back the other direction. But that's kind of just avoiding the problem. So I have a dog that once all the fun is had and she sees where we're going, then she's thinking about everything because she thinks all the time. And she's going, okay, I'm just going to go there. So I'm going to, you know, I need to start and stop in a different location so that we don't have something to run back to necessarily. And at this stage in her life, that's about the only way I can get after that. I'm not going to start obedience. Her little neck isn't really ready for any of that. I'm just going to try and set up the situation so that the problem isn't so bad. If I start correcting this little baby out there because she's eating stuff or she's running back towards the kennel or the house, there's no context for her. All she knows is we go out and do this, and sometimes it's fun, and then I get all mad. And so that makes this connection thing between us not as good. So I'm going to try it. It's going to take more effort. I might have to drive down to another piece of the property or something and go, you know, go from there. So that's what's happening right now. Other than that, things are going really well. Just a lot of socialization. I still, and I'll say this, and I know this is flies in what a lot of people do, but she still spends, I know it's January and it's a cold time of the year, she spends some time outside. Now, if it was 10 degrees or down, you know, she would be indoors when she's being restrained in the middle of the day. But her kennel faces south, and so she gets the sun. And when it's warm enough out there that when she gets in her little hay-filled barrel, you know, she's fine. She's laying in the sun and sleeping. And she learns how to be by herself, quiet, and to entertain herself for actually hours at a time. That's a real, real important thing in my book to teach little dogs, is how to just deal with being by themselves, entertaining themselves, and just settling in. So in the beginning for her, that was a little confusing because she'd never been like that before. But now when I put her out there, I throw a dog biscuit in there. So it's like she'll always run down there. And then she's learned now. Sometimes I see her out there throwing her big branch I put in there around and, you know, playing with some of the toys. And then she's, you know, looks at stuff, watches the birds that are flying around in the tree above her. And that, for me, that's a real important part of the training thing. When she gets a little older and we start more formal training and she loads onto the truck or goes into the kennel, it's just going to be routine. And so the separation thing isn't going to be a problem. She's very used to it and understands it starts and then it ends and then you go do more cool stuff. So that's where we are right now. Not too exciting. I'm learning a lot about this dog. And I would encourage everybody with a little dog like this. You know, especially most people listening to this, not all, but most of you have like this high-powered dog you bought, spent a lot of money, or it's got all these fancy dogs, and that's what she is. So you sort of project onto these little guys, you know, what you think about, oh, look, they're so good at this. And you project it. When you start projecting future behavior and performance by what they're doing right now, you know, that's fun to do and it's pleasurable. It's not very useful and it's certainly not useful to your dog. The thing I would do is look for just signs where they tell you about their character and about their personality and about their motivations and how they respond to increasing demand. And do they have some resentment in them? If so, that's something good to know. But in other words, instead of projecting future superstar status on these guys, or, oh, I just love it, look how pretty the eyes are, that's hard to avoid. But also just let the dog tell you about the character and the physicality and kind of the heart and spirit there. They tell you at this age, and I've seen it with little yet unnamed, you know, when she gets in trouble for something, it only takes one time. So maybe she's smart, maybe she's sensitive, maybe it's just a combination of those two. But I look at that, and when I see it consistently, then I know when I start her formal training a few months from now, that tells me a lot about how to approach that. You know, I'm not going to have to go and clunk her over the head, figuratively speaking. She seems to be very open to learning a negative response. You know, no, I don't want you. She used to just crawl up the back of my legs. And I mean maniacally. And that is gone now because it was a negative thing. Being around my feet is nowhere a dog ever wants to be. And so she learned that. She'll step on you. She'll do this kind of stuff. So it's important that there is some negative training that you have to have in there, but also just watch their interactions. when she went into the warm water slough. I posted that on Facebook. It was snowy. It had snowed. And so she's on the snow, and our warm water slough is covered with duckweed, green duckweed. So it just looks like a green flat surface. And she goes right into the slough and it starts swimming around. She's unexpected. I don't know that she's been in water before swimming. I given the time of year, I kind of doubt it. But anyway, she went in there and she's swimming around, and now I'm calling her. I don't think, you know, I'm not going to go, look it, she's going to be a fantastic water dog. It didn't unnerve her is what I learned in that. You know, she fell in there and then starts swimming around. That's a good sign. She didn't panic or overreact or anything else, but she wasn't sure what to do. And I'm sure she was like, what is this non-gravity thing that I'm in now? And I called her out, and then she could hardly get out. And she sat there waiting for me to help her. And so here I am being tough Julie again. And I just kept going. I go, come on, girl. Because she could climb out of it. And finally she did. And then kind of shook off and came running after me. And you could tell she was like, what on earth was that? And then it started to get cold. So she's covered in slough bottom muck and ice. And now she's getting cold. So we finished up. We were going to the mailbox. And we finished that up, came back, and then washed her up and got her warm. And so the next time I tried to go down that direction, she just sat there and looked at me. And she was like, there's this bad stuff down there. And so there was another learning thing for me. It's that stuck with her. She had a memory of that, and it was negative, and it was unexpected. And she was cautious about going there again. I didn't read that she was afraid. She didn't run the other direction, but she was going, are you sure we want to go down there? And so I got her to come with me finally, and she did, and now the boogeyman is gone. But all of those things tell you a lot about a little dog, little tiny things. And so I encourage people that are going through this to spend time more on the little tiny things than the big, oh, this is going to be a superstar. I need to get her on. What is she going to do with a pheasant right now? And all that stuff. You're going to get a lot of information that's going to make your subsequent training and interactions be more thoughtful and more appropriate with the dog instead of just what you do with every puppy. Just really nice if you understand your student when he gets to that point. So that's where we are on her, and I'm learning a lot of stuff, and there's good and bad stuff in there, and I don't judge and, you know, go, oh, this is this kind of puppy. I just take in the information and keep going. So the topic that I want to talk about today is 2021. And I think I've done this the last 2 years where you sit down and this is, you know, there's just something in the air. We all kind of tend to do this. People decide to quit this habit or lose weight or whatever they're doing. Anymore, we just want to be able to get outside and do stuff, I think. But it's time to maybe set the plan for 2021. People with little puppies and people with not little puppies. And how can you make this year, 2021, be the best one yet? Whatever you're doing with your dogs, if you are an obedient shoring person or an agility person or a herding person or a, you know, the ones that go after little rats in the ground, whatever kind of competitive stuff you do, you're probably not doing it right now at this time. And if you're listening to this podcast, you are a viable dog person and perhaps in competitive or at least training things. So the year ahead, you can, it'd be really good to kind of get and formalize it if you're that type, but in your mind, a formal plan for what am I going to do this year and how am I going to get there? And what I want to throw at people with this particular thing is a few thoughts about just you as the trainer. And I deal with people all year long on the phone, on email, on text messages, on, you know, social media. I deal with them. And, you know, a lot of times what we're talking about is they have an issue or a question with their dog. And usually the first thing I hear from them is how it's all their fault. And people think you're supposed to say that to me because I always say whatever your dog is doing, it's your doing. So take responsibility. And that's true. That's true. But I didn't say feel terrible and guilty and like you're inadequate. That's the part that's not useful. I mean, I make mistakes with dogs. I decide to go one route and find out, well, that wasn't the route to go. And then I change and I do another one. I don't go, geez, you're a terrible dog trainer. You should get it perfect every time, because no one does. Whatever it is you do that you are really good at, you are not perfect all the time. What makes us be good dog trainers are the problems that we encounter. And if you look at it that way, that one, you can have a little bit better attitude, a little more positive attitude about the whole thing. And when you do that, that is reflected directly in your dog. So I want to say that again. The problems that you encounter when you are working with your dog, that's what makes you a good dog trainer. That's what does it. I had told people in prior podcasts, when I first started, I started in the field trial thing right after I graduated from college. And I started doing this, and I had the help of my father, who was a mastermind at finding good animals and how you do it and how you look at breedings and all that stuff. And so when I got my first dog and my second dog and field trial stuff, I had top shelf dogs. I really did. I had as good as were out there. And I learned to train those dogs with Danny Farmer, and I learned how to train them. And, and you know, they did stuff. I mean, I won derbies. I won qualifyings. I won opens. These are my first couple dogs derby listed, my first two dogs I ever had. And so I'm thinking, this dog training thing is just pretty easy, or I'm just really talented. I just genuinely thought that. And these dogs were good. You could force fetch these guys in just a couple weeks, and I mean well, and then move forward. You could get through things so quickly because they were so smart and so sensitive and so motivated. So I thought it was awesome. Nothing could be further from the truth, because when a little further down the line, when I was then married to a dog trainer, so therefore by definition a professional, and I was staying home with my kids, then I start training other people's dogs, and I get into the gun dog and the hunt test and the pointing lab dogs, and I wasn't a very good trainer anymore. It was like all this stuff I had done with my dogs prior to that, it didn't work. So something was wrong with these dogs, and it took me a while and a lot of introspection and a lot of humility to go, just because you can train a dog that's real easy to train doesn't mean anything about you as a trainer. What began to make me understand the real nature of dog training was when I trained these dogs that weren't like that, that were not as motivated or maybe not as sensitive or just had weird reactions to stuff and were just real different, like dogs are and like people are. And it took literally years of not doing things right and having to change my approach, you know, and going, hey, I force fetched up 2 dozen dogs like this, and this one doesn't do it. Something's wrong with the dog. It's like, no, something's wrong with the trainer, and you have to figure out how to communicate stuff, et cetera, et cetera. So I no longer run in fear over, you know, dogs that aren't going to be that easy to train, because I understand that is what makes me get a little bit better every time. And it really does. It's not fun to train a dog that you don't match up with. It's not fun to train a dog that's not easy and just gets everything, especially if that's what you've done before. But when you encounter the problems and you make the mistakes and you have the wrong judgment and you take the wrong action and you sit there and look at it realistically, not with the guilt thing, oh, I'm terrible. I mean, the only way you get better is by having dog training problems. That's how you get better. One, don't do what I did in the beginning. It was the dog's fault. Well, these dogs are not good. This is not a dog I should be training. And that was incorrect. Excuse me. It's when you go, all right, this isn't working and I'm not doing the right things and I'm not sure what to do. So I'm going to have to figure out some different things. And you do that by good help. You get it by, don't go on the internet and fling out a question to everybody, but get good help, go to good sources, and get some ideas for maybe a different approach, if that would help you a little bit. And that's a very important thing that I have taken on completely now for quite a while. And I encourage everyone who's doing this serious doctrine thing, don't let the problems and the obstacles and the bumps in the road and the failures, that's part of the deal. That's how you get better. Because you don't get better when you just slide on through here without having to do much. I know that because that's how I started and just thought I was awesome. And I was the opposite of awesome on all this stuff. So, you know, realize that, okay, I'm going to go into this year and all the problems I'm going to have, I would like to encounter them early. And I would like to, you know, address, see if I can figure them out, overcome those problems and move forward. So let's kill the guilt and the, I'm just not very good. That's just an excuse not to do anything. Because the best trainers that you see out there, when you go watch the best of the best outrunning dogs, those guys have encountered 1,000 more problems than you have. And that's why they're there. Because one, they didn't let it stop them. They didn't let it become an insurmountable obstacle. And they took that as part of the deal. So that's one very important thing. Now, the second part of this that I want to talk about on that is when you do have problems with dogs, and I've talked about this a fair amount throughout this series, you don't, the best thing to do is not to go after the big problem, but if you go after the little things, then the big things wind up getting taken care of. And so what do I mean by that? And I've used this example before, but if you have a dog, let's say it's an upland dog, because a fair amount of you are that listening to this. So you've got a dog, he points, you had him on a lot of birds. If you're over there, he behaves. If you're not there, if he's far enough away from you, then he goes in and catches the bird. And so when you have electric collar on, he's okay. But when you take the electric collar off, he's not. And so we have a disobedience problem. We have a disrespect. You know, this rogue guy just kind of does whatever he wants in case I'm not there. So, you know, you go to the experts and you go, how do I make him? How do I make this dog be steady? That's always what I get asked. How do I make this dog be steady? As if steady was the problem. And that's a big problem, because if you're competing in pointing things, they don't, you know, they need to point the bird and they need to stay there and not go grab it for you. So that's a big problem, and you get failed when they do stuff like that. But that's the big thing. So if we take this and we break this down into the little tiny pieces, which is a very good process to get comfortable with. So the dog presumably has been taught the upland manners. If your dog is in the upland field and they don't know that they need to stay within your range and stay with you and work with you and pay attention to you, if they don't know that, that's your even bigger problem. So you have to break the big problem down. You know, we're out in the upland field. The dog is, sometimes he'll hold and sometimes he just goes and grabs birds, and I've done everything I know how. We get the cords out. And then if I have a cord on, he doesn't go. And if I have the cord off, he does go. And same with the collar. So the best way to approach a big unsteady problem like that, okay, is to start from the beginning. And it really, just like, and I'll suggest this to some of you that have difficulty with this. This is some advice I've given to other people. So when you're trying to figure out what's really going on and what the problem is and how to break it down and go after the little pieces of it, I would suggest that you get out on a walk with your dog somewhere where you're away from people and begin to describe this thing to a small audience of people who want to learn from you. You have a little bit people that are behind you in the pointing lab world, and they want to know, oh, what do you do about a problem like that? And you have to explain to them this dog and what's happening so that they too can learn. And just if you break it down, so you have all these people who don't know anything and they're going, why is your dog doing that? And so we begin from the beginning. So when we go in the upland field, one, what happens when you get your dog out of your vehicle, right? Does he get out and just head out in the field? Okay, I think we found maybe the root cause of a lot of things. So the steadiness is of course the way it is. So if we just go back to the beginning, when I get my dog out of the vehicle, Does he sit down and go, okay, what are we doing? Put my stuff on, let's go. And I've seen so many. I've had a few. I open the door, they're out in the field. Now, those dogs, when they do that with me, they're not trained enough yet. They're just so excited about the birds that they forget some of the basics. And I don't, you know, that's a little, when a little guy does that for a short while, it's okay. But you get this big dog that's supposed to be steady and you're running master level stuff. You get out of the truck and they just blow you off and go out there. I think we have a very giant symptom here. And then, so you describe the dog. And then now you do get him back, finally. Probably had to throw a bumper or shoot your gun or something. You get him back and you gear him up with your training gear and you go out in the upland field. All right, this dog is going to tell you everything. Are they with you? Are they connected? Is this the way you guys have agreed that you're going to move through a field? Is that present? Or on the does the dog just walk with you because they're going, I don't know, I was getting in trouble. I'll just stay right here where it's safe. Okay, then there's another problem. So if you break down the whole behavior from the beginning, and I just said two opposites. One just takes off and leaves you, and the other one is just licking your boots right there, and they're just going to be safe because for some reason they think when they go out there, bad stuff happened. When you have dogs that are over-controlled or have been over-corrected on things beyond their ability to grasp or understand or get the desired effect, then they are going to be resentful. And they might go out there on the bird, and when you don't have a means to make them do the right thing, they're going to go, I'm just going to grab this thing. So you get this major pushback because they've gotten so many corrections out there. But you have to tell the story of your dog to have that picture start to paint itself. Or when your dog just runs out there and totally ignores you and points the bird, and when you just get close enough, reaches in there and grabs it, and just really doesn't care one way or the other about what you're doing. Okay, that tells a story too. This dog doesn't have resentment. He has absolutely no respect. So now we have a dog that has no respect. Two entirely different problems that may look the same when it comes to actual bird interactions. So you don't go after the big problem. You shrink it down and go into the little problems that go into that. And they start when your dog gets out of the truck. And they start when your dog, you and your dog gear up and walk into the field. Many times they're going to tell you exactly how they're feeling right there. And you have to pay attention to that because they're telling you how they feel about all this stuff. So you don't go out there for the dog that's catching birds and go, listen, I'm going to whoa break the holy heck out of this dog. You can probably do whatever you want. You're never going to change what's causing the behavior in this dog, which is your general, the state of mind you've got them in, the over-controlling or the no controlling at all, and how they feel about you. One is fear and the other one is just complete, I don't give a hoot about you. So that's a good upland example of breaking these things down to small problems. Let me shrink back and we'll do an example with obedience. Let's just say, I'm just coming up with this on the fly right here. Let's just say I like this one. The dog is very good on obedience on the leash and pretty good off the leash unless anything else happens. As a squirrel goes by, there's another dog. They're not so good unless there's something else. And so, you know, how can I make this dog, respond to me all the time, no matter what? What's wrong with this dog and what do I do? Again, let's just shrink this back now to the little pieces of this. You know, it looks like a dog that's obedient only when they're going to be made to be and not otherwise. So what that means, let's explain this to you. Have a group of people learning to do dog obedience with their dogs. And you have to explain to them, this is what's happening, and this is how you troubleshoot this, and this is how you go about it. So let's take this dog that does obedience on a leash, but not off, and shrink it back to the very start. So how do you do obedience? What is the equipment that you use? Do you have the right kind of leash on there? I'm a leash and choke chain person. I'm not a prong collar person. Because that's kind of like using an electric collar. It's like, I'm going to hurt you if you don't do it. And I don't think, for me, but don't start that way with me. If you hurt me to get me to do something, well, you and I aren't going to get along. And so out of respect to these animals, I think we need to start with the teaching and the education and then conditioning in the response. So you teach them what heel means by saying it one time and then making sure they do it. And you teach them what sit means by saying it one time and making sure they do it. And then you do with non-boring repetition, which means not exactly the same thing all the time. Then you teach these guys, right? Now we're going to heal and sit. And you do it in the, within the limits of their attention span, not yours, theirs, which is really kind of momentary, just 3-4 minutes maybe in the beginning. And so we're going to teach them that heal means heal, sit means sit. And it means it the first time you hear it. So you can't be saying it a bunch of times. Because when you heal, 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 sit, sit, and say it 3 or 4 times, I don't know how many times I've seen that. People bring their dog over and they're so proud. And they, you know, I said, let's do some obedience. And it's heal, 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 heal. And you get all the, so it's like a different command. Heal is one and heal means something else. I'm not sure. And so there's variations. And so we got lots of stuff to it. And then they say it multiple times. And the decibel level changes or the emphasis. And sit, that's my favorite. They'll say sit. Usually 3 is it. You know, sometimes it's a 4-banger, but usually it's 3 times sit and then they sit. So the result of that is that nothing really means anything. You just sort of nag them into doing all this stuff. And it's when you have to say sit 3 times, that would, if I did that to you when you came to my house and I said, here, please come in and sit down, sit down, sit down. I think you would look at me and think I was very rude because I'm nagging you to hurry up and sit down. But if and this is an odd example, I realize that, but what you need to do is be able to say it once and have them go, ah, sit. So there's a lot of clarity. So the problem is initiating by all of the noise and lack of clarity in just your basic interactions on heal and set. So when that's how it is and when it's, you know, you got different tones of voice and you have different levels of attention you're paying to, and you're not conditioning any responses into them. And that is clarity. Sit, bottom goes down. Sit, bottom goes down. Sit, bottom always goes down. If they ever try to have the bottom not go down, you require that it does go down in the means that you do that. When you have that kind of clarity, then they understand that the command itself is the most important thing. When you've got the noise and the repetition and the chain, the hey, multi-syllable, single-syllable words and all that, then it becomes a kind of a noise and kind of a nag. And so as soon as something more interesting comes along, they're gone. So it's not, okay, when they do that, you know, that's what you're going to get. Oh, well, then what you need to do is get a long cord or get the electric collar on there, none of which is the answer, none of that. I mean, you can do that. And then they learn, as long as I have the long cord or the electric collar on, I got to kind of pay attention. But if they don't, I don't have to. Again, you have to go after this kind of a problem from the tiny very beginnings, the little things. Go after the little things, like sit the first time. When I say heel, come back to my left or right side, whatever side it is. Move with me. That kind of thing where you condition that response in, and that takes a little time and effort. That's where you get a dog that continues to respond to you, even if there's a squirrel or another dog or whatever. And so the big problem, what seems like a big problem, is actually addressed by just taking care of the small things first. So in this whole dog training endeavor that you have, the simplicity of the thought here is what draws you to be in the same world with your dog, because they do, that's how they are. So the nagging and the lots of fancy stuff and the talk, 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 and all the different ways of, oh, I tried this kind of a chain, and then I tried the prong collar, and then I tried the electric collar, and you get all this stuff, and you wonder why the dog just doesn't respond very well or gets resentful. And it all comes back to the minute interactions that you have with your dog before you even start the work, and then when you're actually carrying out the work. So my goal on this part of this talk is to get people, one, to say, this is what I would like to do this year. And I think we're going to have most of the competitive events back, barring some really bad things happening with the virus, but it looks optimistic right now. So we do have these things. Man, go for it. Plan to go do something awesome with your dog. And plan to plan out the work that you want to do, the steps you want to go through. Understand that you are looking for the problems. You are looking for the problems that are coming up. It's funny when I get, when people tell me about their dogs, I'm going to get a dog in for training or I help somebody, and they tell me stuff. They tell me all good stuff. You know, oh, he does this really good and he does this. And that is nice. That gives me nothing to go on, because what I want to hear are, where are the problems? Where are the places you're having issues? Because that's what you have to go after. That's where the training happens. You use their, you know, talent and passion for stuff to make them love all this and enjoy doing it, but you have to look where the problems are. So when people tell me nothing but how great their dog is, that is not useful information, because I'm not going to act on that. You have to act on where the obstacles are, where the confusion is, where the performance and the response is not there. So look at your dog in terms of, it's great they're talented, it's great they're good at stuff, but look at that, and then this is the place where I have some bobbles. Here's some place where I have some confusion. I'm not sure what to do. They're doing this. You know, they're catching birds in the field, or they won't do obedience with me if a squirrel is in the tree, or whatever kind of problem you're having. Okay, let's find those problems, because that's the thing that directs your training, is where you need the weak spots that you need to improve upon. And then once you've identified these problems and welcomed them, because that's the purpose of dog training, it is to get all the problems there and begin to address them. And they're not a reflection of you being a bad trainer or that being a bad dog. It is a reflection of the process between two living creatures trying to get to kind of the same outcome. It's all the problems is what makes you good. So welcome those things. You know, don't shy away from them. Don't hide them. And don't talk about how great they are at something and leave out the part that they eat the bird. Okay, let's just be very direct with yourself with that. And don't blame yourself. And look forward to it. It's what gives you good stuff to do. And then when you do have these problems or issues, don't go after the big thing. You need to break that down to the very, very first principles, starting from the very unglamorous part, not where there's a lot of action and fun, but just the very, very beginnings, both of what the dog tells you, how you communicate with your dog, and what's happening right there. And it's in those little tiny pieces where you are going to find the solutions to all of the big problems. And that's the whole goal of training, is to take all the problems and begin to address them one by one in the right order, and then wind up with, you know, as successful a year as you could possibly have. So I offer that to everybody right now. I hope that makes sense. It's the dog training thing is not complicated. It is far simpler than most people think. It's not black and white, and it's not like, it's not a recipe deal. I don't care what, you know, there's not, okay, this is what you do. Do this, then this, then this, then this, then this. If you just do that, you're going to just step over some stuff you shouldn't be ignoring. But it is simple if you really clarify and just stay with those things that have a lot of meaning. Leave your ego out of it and leave the superstar status and this dog is so great at this. Let's deal with the things that need to be trained. You know, just like if you go to the gym. If you go to the gym and you have no muscle in your upper body and a bunch in your lower body, we aren't going to do a bunch of lower body exercises. We're going to build up the part that needs building up. And it's the same way in your training. Let's find the places that need to be built up or worked on and address those from the very smallest pieces of it first. So I hope that helps everybody. I will keep on going. I hope we'll have a name next time and talk more about the little baby. Because I just look for stuff where she's not perfect, because that's the stuff I want to be aware of and learn how to work with and deal with. So there we go. Happy New Year to everybody. And thanks for your listenership. I appreciate it a lot. And we will be back soon.